All right, it's a big week here on CBS Sports as we are launching a lot of our rankings, our sleepers, our breakouts, our busts. Great fantasy baseball content for you on CBSSports.com/fantasy. Welcome. This is Monday morning, about 9:30 a.m. Eastern. I'm Adam Azer with Scott White. Hello, Scott White.
Hello, Adam Azer.
With Heath Cummings. What's up, Heath Cummings?
What's up, buddy?
And Chris Towers. Hello, Chris.
Yo.
A little more, Chris.
Yo.
Feel
Chris,
it, Chris
hasn't had his Diet Coke this
so
morning. He's very
quiet.
Yeah.
I'm giving my all.
Well, look, if you're new to the show, if this is your first year listening to the podcast, welcome, everybody. We're going to help you every single day during the season, and you know, we're going to be three times a week this week. Pretty soon it'll be four, then it'll be five. We might even skip four. Who knows? But we are going to be the best resource for you, combined with our website, with our videos on CBSSports.com. We're going to help you win your fantasy league. We're going to have an awesome time along the way. Today we're taking an early look at some sleepers. Things are going to change. It's only January 23rd. Things are going to change, but I asked Scott, Heath, and Chris for four names, four sleepers, just to take an early look right now and get you some names to think about. We're actually doing a draft later today, so we'll see where these guys go. But we're going to focus mostly on the sleepers and your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We do have some news to run through, and as much as I hate to do this, as we get the week started, yeah, look, I'm a little sick, by the way. You can probably tell in my voice. Clearly the worst part of the weekend was waking up on Sunday and reading that awful news about two Major League Baseball players, Jordano Ventura and former Major Leaguer Andy Marte, dying in separate car accidents in the Dominican Republic. And Heath, of course, is a huge Royals fan, and I think every baseball fan is affected by this. It's really sad and tragic and just not enough words to describe it. But Heath, as a Royals fan, and I know you've been listening to some Kansas City stuff this morning and reading about it and all that, and I don't know, you want to say anything about Jordano Ventura?
The thing I said to you this morning was, and I'm not somebody that's generally greatly impacted by celebrity deaths. Jose hit me hard last year, and that kind of surprised me, and this hit me harder yesterday because he's a Royal. I thought Dayton Moore said it really well yesterday. This is the time to celebrate Jordano's life. And so there's a lot of good things that you can think back at game six of the 2014 World Series and when he was on. Like I tweeted out that this is one of the problems with just looking at the stats only, because you look at his stats and he looks like a pretty average pitcher. And he wasn't ever average though. Like he was spectacular or he was awful, but he had that run on the two seam and that curveball when it was working.
He rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and yep. I think it sucks that that's what a lot of people are going to remember about him, because like he played the game with flair.
He had passion.
And yeah. Like that should be something that we celebrate.
Right.
And that's what I'll remember about Jordano Ventura.
It's weird in the role we have with baseball. Because, and I'm sure a lot of people listening are the same way. We play in so many leagues that we can remember like our own personal history mm-hmm. with just about everybody. And, I think back to Jordano Ventura in a 2014 Dynasty League. I mean, when I got him as a minor leaguer and I was so excited about this guy, he throws 100, like this is great. And now it's the timing is weird because Jose Fernandez, yeah. There's hardly been any baseball since that happened, and, mm-hmm. and now we're going through this again. It's just sad. It just hits you differently because you feel like you have something with him personally.
And I will share one other story that I heard listening to Kansas City Radio this morning that I thought was very Jordano. Because, he had a tattoo of flames on his right arm. When they signed him, he was throwing in the 80s. He was like 140 pounds. And then over the next year and a half, he just exploded. And he got so much joy out of throwing the ball hard. And they fought that all through the minor leagues. And finally, they had to come to an agreement with him to where he would pitch most of the game. But three or four times a game, they would give him the signal. And he could just throw it as hard as he wanted. Because that was his favorite thing about playing baseball, was just light up the radar gun.
Yeah. And I think his favorite thing that many people would say about watching him was watching him light up the radar gun like few could. And as far as Andy Marte goes, there's less that we could say but equally as tragic. And of course, thoughts and prayers to everybody affected, and just sorry to hear the news. Yeah. In terms of the rest of the news and notes, guys, I'd like to go through this pretty quickly because, you know, it is January, and I don't want to get bogged down in some minor stuff here. I want to spend more time on your sleepers. But Oakland, in terms of bullpen news, Oakland manager Bob Melvin did not commit to a closer, and Milwaukee signed Neftali Feliz to a one-year deal for a little over $5 million. Feliz with a lot of strikeouts last year. He's only 29 years old, or he will be in May. 3.52 ERA, 61 strikeouts, 10 homers allowed, and 53 2/3 with Pittsburgh last year. But who would you draft first if you were drafting closers today? Your favorite A's reliever? Let's say it's Madsen. Well, or who your favorite? Or Neftali Feliz with the Brewers?
I would go Feliz just because it's clear he has the job, and I don't think. I think it's pretty secure too. I don't think he's a dominant closer. I think he can be okay in the role, and I don't think there's any real alternative. I mean, we were talking about Corey Knebel before they signed Feliz, but he was terrible last year. So I think Feliz will get you the saves you want, and probably without sending you scurrying to the waiver wire, at least not early in the year.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm almost tempted to say Madsen just because I have a fear that Feliz going to Milwaukee is going to last about 20 days as a closer. His strikeout rate was amazing last year, but that was it. Everything else was awful.
I think that's the most important thing, though. And walks are probably second most important. Home runs from a closer. I remember that year K-Rod had where his home run rate was off the charts.
He is an extreme fly ball pitcher, though.
And this is a terrible place for
him. It still seems, though, like, I know Adam doesn't want to get bogged down on this. It just seems like it's hard to assess that rate. It's 10. I mean, you know, it's such a small number of innings as with any reliever.
The bigger problem is just that you've got like Ryan Madsen, Santiago Casillas, Sean Doolittle, Ryan Dahl. You've got way too many guys in Oakland's bullpen.
Yeah.
So it's just maybe collectively they'll be better.
Just maybe get a couple closers before we get to this point in the draft. let's not count on one of these.
Yeah, this is probably more. It might be a moot point because you're talking an NL only league versus an AL only league.
I mean, anyone who's going to be a closer on opening day is going to get drafted.
Absolutely.
In a roto league,
absolutely. Like
Fernando Rodney's going to get drafted. You know,
I would draft him before all these guys.
Okay, so some more news. We'll come back to Mark Trumbo. We'd probably spend a little bit of time on that. But I'm going to give you a note, and you just tell me what late-round pick, mid-round pick, not going to be drafted, insignificant, whatever. Tyson Ross, not expected to debut until May or June for the Rangers, according to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
AL only.
Yeah, I don't think you can draft him in mixed.
Out of my top 100, I agree.
Angels sign Luis Valbuena.
Okay, good for them.
I think that definitely makes their offense better.
Ouch, Scott White.
Well, no, where's he gonna play? Did they move Crone to DH? Or no, they got Pujols at DH. Where's he going to play?
I think you can...
at third base, Crone at first, obviously.
Catcher.
I think he'll be like a 300 at bat reserve.
Okay. See, I think he's like the fourth best hitter on their team.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Atlanta signed Kurt Suzuki.
Backup catcher, I would guess.
Okay. Yeah. And San Diego signed Trevor Cahill.
Okay, good for them.
All right, Scott White. What the hell, Scott? The Falcons are in the Super Bowl. You should be.
I know.
You should be pumped about everything.
Paying attention to baseball this weekend. What are you talking about? I don't know how to react because not only is one of my teams in a championship game.
But the other one signed Kurt Suzuki.
Oh, yeah.
You've got too much good stuff going on.
Too
right
many
now.
Good things, yes.
It's truly an embarrassment of riches.
I haven't seen a team in my play for a championship in more than half my life. So that, and then the fact that they got there so easily, like it was the fourth quarter and I was yawning and it's like my team's about to go to the Super Bowl and like it was just so easy, too easy.
I think they're going to get killed.
I don't know how to respond.
I think they're going to get crushed.
Yeah, I wonder, because I think the ratings for this game will show us just how interested people are in cheering against the Patriots.
You think they're going to get crushed?
I do.
You know, people have been underestimating the Falcons at every stop here, and they won handily.
I will just say it will very, very easy for me to root against the Patriots in this game. The Falcons are a likable team, class organization. What's his name? The owner, Arthur Blank. Was dancing.
It's hard to cheer for Scott Pioli, though.
Give me that.
So hard. Scott Pioli.
Yeah, but the Patriots have a lot
Patriots
of guys who are easy.
Patriots started Scott Pioli.
They made him.
They have a lot of guys who are easy to root against.
Yeah. America's team, the Falcons. Get behind it, people.
Woo! A lot of people will. Finally, Baltimore signed Mark Trumbo to a 3-year deal, $37.5 million. Last year, Trumbo was the number 7 outfielder in points leagues, number 6 in Roto. He hit .256, which is, you know, fairly normal for him. Trumbo had a couple years where he was hitting in the .230s, but a lot of his career, .250, .260, something like that. But 47 home runs. His career high before that was 34 in 2013. Trumbo also drove in 108 runs and only 27 doubles in 159 games. So look, he's a home run guy, no doubt about it. But, this is good news. I mean, I think going back to Baltimore is certainly a good thing for Trumbo. And can he have another 40 home run season?
I don't see why not. He's.
I would take the under.
I would definitely take the under of 40.
Oh, okay. Maybe I guess I technically would too, but I'd be like the 37 to 39 range, you know.
Well,
he's probably a good power hitter.
We talked about Bautista last week. Who would you rather have, Trumbo or Bautista?
Bautista, yeah.
Yeah, I've got him ahead. I'm expecting it. When does second half Adam come in here and start talking about Mark Trumbo losing it in 2016? Because he was not good at all in the second half.
Is that right? I think he has a history of that.
.214 average, .284 on base.
You go back and you look at him. You look at him, you know, when he was a good, like, 35-ish, 34-ish home run guy. He was a bad second half player, Trumbo, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there were usually injuries at play, but, you know, I mean, just the kind of player Trumbo is, poor plate discipline, rough patches are going to be the norm. You just want him sending them over the fence as often as he can.
And it's a good place for him to hit.
Yeah.
He raised his hard hit rate. So there are positive signs. His hard hit rate was up to 40%. I would guess that regresses more to the 35% range, and the home run to fly ball ratio goes down. But he hits a lot of fly balls. He plays in a good park. He plays in a good division. You definitely bet on 30 home runs.
I'll go 37 home runs, 90 RBI, 80 runs.
Oh, that's a pretty good year. Pretty good year. Sell him at the All-Star break, though. Okay. Scott tried Thin Mint cereal today. Thin Mint cereal.
Yeah, I did. The Girl Scout cookie, they're like making cereals out of the Girl Scout cookies now. And I tried the Thin Mints. I also bought the Samoa's version, although I think they call it something else.
Gross.
Those are my two favorite Girl Scout cookies. Ugh. Those are the only two brands of the cereal I've seen. So, yeah. You know, you eat cereal every day. You got to mix it up. Something new hits the shelves. You got to try it out. Thin Mint cereal, I can't say I recommend it, but it's not terrible. It is weird when your breakfast leaves that kind of like cool minty feeling in the back of your throat, though. That's a little weird.
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, Samoas are trash.
Samoas are trash.
I love Girl Scout cookies. Samoas are trash.
Like
anything with toasted coconut is trash.
So you just don't like coconut. That's unfair.
I'm with you.
Have a problem with the specific ingredient. Well, it's like people who don't like cilantro.
They made the whole thing around a bad ingredient. Don't blame me. Don't get mad at me.
I love coconut.
Don't get mad at me.
I know. Chris, that's one of the smartest things you've said on the podcast. Before we get to the sleepers, well, we have a tradition on CBSSports.com Fantasy Podcast. It's Team Name Tuesday. Not quite ready for a full-fledged Team Name Tuesday, so let's save it until a little bit later in the offseason or, you know, as we get closer to spring training. But we do have an email from Jim. He gave us two pretty cool, statty team names, and his two team names are Miracle Whip, which, you know, like Whip, and Born to Be My Babip after the Bon Jovi song.
I would say, let's update it a little, make it a little more contemporary, and go with Always Be My Babip.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, well, Mariah's very topical. Yeah. But
she's in the news.
What are, but are you okay? No, no, I wasn't being sarcastic. Like, you're on fire today, Chris. Are you okay with pronouncing it that way, though, for the sake of a team name?
That, yeah, sure.
Okay, good stuff. Okay, here's how we're going to do the sleepers. We're going to go Scott, then Heath, then Chris. We're going to snake draft it. Then Chris, then Heath, then Scott.
Whoa.
Yeah. See how many we get to. We're not going
to
get to.
Remind me. I might lose track.
We're going to, don't worry about it. I'll help you out. We're going to get to as many as we can, but I want to remind you to go to the website, cbssports.com/fantasy, to get the complete columns. Tomorrow is actually the launch of a lot of this stuff, but, you know, be on the lookout.
I don't know that that's 100% confirmed.
I think for most of the content it is.
Okay.
All right. You know, bottom line is throughout the next few days and weeks, it's going to be a ton of stuff to help you get ready for your draft.
Yeah.
So, all right. First sleeper here. Scott White, Garrett.
Wait, if this is a snake draft, shouldn't we get to pick which sleeper we're going to talk about off of our list?
Fair enough. Just,
you're a snake draft.
Scott White?
Yeah.
Pick a it's your pick. Who do you want to talk about?
Well, since I have this part of my sleepers column directly in front of me, I'm going to go with Kevin Kiermaier.
Oh, that was the one I was going to say don't talk about because that was last week. But you know what? That's fine. That's fine. Fresh content, Kevin Kiermaier.
I couldn't remember if I talked about him on the podcast or not.
We did. God,
stop talking about Kevin Kiermaier.
Well, look, I think nobody ever talks about Kevin Kiermaier as a fantasy option, and I think it needs to start because you look at what he did last year. You just project out the totals over a full season of bats. He missed some time with a broken hand, I think it was. You project that out. It would have been about a 20-homer, 30-steal season, so that should already pique your interest. And the thing that I think gets lost in this is just how good of a contact hitter he is. His strikeout rate was above average. It was about on the level of Joey Votto, who, you know, hits 300 every year. So the fact that Kiermaier hit 240-something last year, I don't think that's what we should expect from him. I think he's probably more of a 270-ish hitter. He can obviously run as good of a center field as he plays, so I'm not really worried about the steals pace regressing. Home runs might seem like something we weren't anticipating from him, but you know, his ISO was better than Xander Bogaerts, Ian Desmond. He has some pop. He's starting to develop it anyway. I think we see this a lot of times from elite defenders. They're just such good athletes that eventually they learn to do something with the bat too. Kevin Kiermaier, because he had had some bad BABIP luck last year, and because he missed time with injury, I think his performance got overlooked, and I think he'll be a nice fourth outfielder type.
Chris and I are internally debating who is going to break the BABIP
luck. I'll say it. Okay. It wasn't bad luck.
I think it was.
No, he hit 27 infield fly balls. He had a 25% infield fly ball rate. That is insanely high, and that's just going to kill your BABIP, and that's not necessarily bad luck. Now, that's not
I think if he makes contact with that kind of power, then I think there is room for the batting average.
But he only had a 31% hard contact rate. He had a 26% soft contact rate. That's one of the highest numbers I've seen.
That's really high. The one thing I would say is, you know, the infield fly ball rate could regress. 25% is extremely high. That's one of the highest I've seen last season. But he also did seem to make a concerted effort to put the ball in the air more. 37% fly ball percentage was his highest yet. And I would say that probably those two things probably aren't unrelated.
Well,
that's
look,
the right way to say it.
One thing, you know,
Kiermaier.
For Scott here, for Kiermaier, he's getting better.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's trending up. So,
yeah,
27.
That's the thing. I mean, the breaking down what goes into a BABIP, I guess, it's useful, but you're still basically, you're doing the one thing you're not supposed to do, which is assuming what a player just did is exactly what he's going to do again.
Well,
I think the most important stat in relation to BABIP is strikeout rate. And I think Kevin Kiermaier does very well in that regard.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right, guys. Heath.
Yeah.
You're on the clock.
Have we done Travis Shaw yet?
Not since the trade.
Can we do a fun Travis Shaw math lesson?
I love when Heath brings this stuff to the table. We certainly can, sir.
Okay, let's just say that Travis Shaw plays third base every day for the Brewers this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets 600 plate appearances. He has, with his career average, you'd expect him to hit about 400 balls in play. At his career fly ball rates, you'd expect him to hit about 175 fly balls. Okay? Milwaukee is, and always has been, an elite place for left-handed power hitters to hit. Left-handed fly ball hitters of any type. Last year, three of the top 17 home run to fly ball rates were Brewers. Ryan Braun led baseball with a 28% home run to fly ball rate. If Travis Shaw had a 28% home run to fly ball rate with all those other stats, he'd hit 49 home runs next year because he hits so many fly balls. Now, he's not going to, but if he just had Jonathan Villar's home run rate from last year, he'd hit 35 home runs.
And 600 at bats.
I think the expectation for Shaw, if he plays every day, is 25 to 30. That would be basically a 15% home run to fly ball rate, which is what the Brewers team average was last year.
And last year was an outlier in that regard. They were a couple ticks higher than normal. I think over the last decade, they've been about 14%.
27 home runs will set the over-under if Travis Shaw plays every day. Chris, I think, would probably say 25. But
24.5.
But I don't believe at all that 35 is out of a reasonable set of expectations.
Well, I will say that you had Chris Carter as a sleeper last year, who is a righty, but still played for Milwaukee. And I was like, he's terrible. And did he lead Major League? Did he lead baseball in home runs? He was up there.
He led majors in home runs.
Yep.
No, actually, Trumbo did. He led the NL.
He led the NL. Right. Yeah, I mean, there's something here. Obviously a big problem for Travis Shaw, whose nickname is Mayor of Ding Dong City, by the way.
Yeah, yes. Well, yeah, it's going to, I mean, he's going to earn that nickname this year.
No, he's definitely going to get reelected this year.
Yeah. He can't hit lefties. He batted 187 against lefties and 107 at bats. So is he going to get the plate appearances that he needs?
That's what I question. It's kind of contingent on him getting 600 at bats. They have Hernan Perez there, who's going to bounce around third base among the positions where he'll probably fill in sometimes.
Right.
I just don't think Travis Shaw, the complete package, is enough that any team is going to classify him as an everyday player. He's a pretty good power hitting corner infielder. And I think it'll probably be 450-ish at bats, maybe closer to 500.
So you think he gets less playing time than he did last year in Boston?
I think there's a good chance he does.
I can't imagine. Like, he's on a team with far less options.
I don't think they have fewer options. They may have. I mean, who did the Red Sox have? Pablo Sandoval.
Yeah, well, he wasn't
Brock
an option
Holt,
anymore.
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Hernan Perez is a better alternative than any of them.
Okay,
and Scooter Jeanette, they're going to have to find playing time for him.
I don't know why they would.
Okay.
All right. But hold on. Travis Shaw, I'm looking at the consensus rankings here. Travis Shaw or Justin Bour?
Shaw.
I'll take Shaw, but I feel like it's a similar issue for each of them. I think it'll be less than part-time at-bats, probably break 20 homers, but not enough to make them mixed league material.
And Chris, I'll go to you. Travis Shaw or Steve Pierce?
I have one spot higher in Rota.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was asking a different thing, but my bad. Travis Shaw or Steve Pierce, Chris?
Shaw.
Oh.
I'll give the guy who has the platoon advantage there.
Okay.
Shaw. Yeah, I agree. It seems like the consensus rankings are closer to how I feel.
That's why he's a sleeper.
Okay. Yeah, the thing is about a lot of these sleepers is that we're doing a 12-team points league draft today, which is fairly shallow. 21 rounds. I don't know how many of these guys are going to get drafted.
I'm taking Travis Shaw today.
Good luck with that.
I'm not taking Kevin Kiermaier. It's a three outfielder league. I'm not going to happen.
Chris, you're on the clock. Give me a sleeper.
Let's go with a better version of Travis Shaw. Let's go with Tommy Joseph.
Yeah.
Already had the power breakout. I think it's legit. He had 21 home runs in 72 starts last season. I think Travis Shaw is some, or Tommy Joseph, excuse me, is someone who can, I think he can challenge for 40 home runs.
Woo.
I mean, why not? He had a 37% hard hit rate, a 45% fly ball rate. If we do the math experiment, he's going to be the everyday first baseman. The Phillies don't really have any reason to not play him every day and see what they've got. He held his own against righties last season, had a, it was a 790 OPS against them.
Yeah.
I think Tommy Joseph's legit. I think, okay. I think he's a legitimately good player.
Yeah, Tommy Joseph is 25 years old. He batted 257 with 25 home runs in 107 games. And we have, RotoWire updates, you know, for all of our players on our website. And this is just reading verbatim. Joseph walked at a 3.7% clip in the first half, but improved that to 8.6% while also cutting his strikeout rate from 24.7% to 18.9% after the All-Star break. So long story short, Joseph had much better plate discipline in the second half. One thing I did notice, he was unbelievably streaky. I mean,
He had that weird stretch late in the season where he got benched for Ryan Howard because they wanted to give Ryan Howard a nice goodbye, but I don't think that's going to happen.
All right, well, he was very up and down. But go ahead. Yeah, Tommy Joseph. So Joseph or Shaw, guys? Chris, sounds like you would take Joseph?
I think it's pretty easy. I have him six spots ahead of Shaw at first base.
I think they're similarly abled. I actually fear for Joseph's playing time more because the Phillies have a player played all of last year at AA, 23 years old. Rhys Hoskins is his name. I believe he led all minor leaguers in home runs. It's a homer-friendly park. So there's some questions there. But it's not like he was a non-prospect prior to last year. He bats left-handed. Oh, actually, he doesn't. He bats right-handed. So it wouldn't be a platoon threat. But I do think he is going to be up at some point this year. And the only place they could possibly play him is first base. So it might become kind of a timeshare there.
I'll take Shaw.
We're in round two of the draft now. Chris has the first pick of round two. I'm going to ask you guys to maybe skew a little shallower for round two. So pick a guy that might actually be drafted in today's draft. Chris, you're on the clock.
A guy who might actually be drafted in today's draft. Well, then I will say any of those three guys. Let's go with, I think Matt Wieters is being undervalued coming into the season. I know the fact that he doesn't have a team, obviously.
that hurts.
You know, it's going to be hard for him to put up numbers if he doesn't have a team. But I think Matt Wieters is going to find a team eventually. There aren't that many good catchers out there. He's a good one, and currently he's being ranked and drafted in like the 240 range, I'm pretty sure.
Why didn't the Braves go get Matt Wieters instead of Kurt Suzuki?
Because the Braves aren't going to give up a comp pick.
Well, they wouldn't have to.
They wouldn't?
No, he accepted that offer last year, so I don't think the Orioles gave it to him again. But it seems like the way the catcher market has gone this offseason, like all anybody cares about catcher anymore is pitch framing. And Matt Wieters, he was considered a good defensive catcher until all this pitch framing came out, and he's one of the worst at it. So that's why Jason Castro got a 3-year deal from the Twins. Clearly an inferior offensive player, but a much better pitch framer. Tyler Flowers, the Braves' current starting catcher.
Yeah, see, like,
he's terrible at throwing out base runners, but he's a great pitch framer.
That seems like I'm all, you know me, love my sabermetrics, but like if we're going to take it to the point where Tyler Flowers is a better player than Matt Wieters just because of pitch framing, I'm going to have to call shenanigans on this whole movement. Like that just seems dumb to me.
Well, that's one of my sleeper picks. There's an issue, a pitch framing issue going on there too, but we'll get to that.
I think it has value.
How good is Matt Wieters? Because he really hasn't been. He's never been as good as people wanted him to be. His best seasons, you know, hitting 262, 249, 235 in 2011, 12, and 13 with 22 and 23 home runs each year.
That's pretty good.
I don't know. Do you think he's a 250 hitter with 20 homers?
Yep. Yeah.
Is that really that good?
That's a top 10 catcher.
For sure.
That's Brian McCann, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that he's quite that good, I gotta say. I think that's the upside for Wieters, 250, 20 home runs.
The thing is, he also used to play every day. He was kind of on a similar pace last season. He only played 124 games, whereas he used to play 140 to 150.
Can we just talk about the hypocrisy of keeping steroid users out of the Hall of Fame but glorifying pitch framing?
That's not cheating. Like, okay, so you want them to catch it as sloppy as possible.
By any reasonable definition, it is cheating.
No, it's not cheating.
You are attempting to
fool the umpire
through chicanery and flim-flammery.
No.
Gain an undue competitive advantage.
How can you avoid
robot umpire?
Now.
No, well, that's different. But from the player, if you're a player and you say, you know, I really want to do well, but I don't want to cheat.
I mean.
How do you catch the ball?
Steroids weren't against the major league rules until 2001.
Yeah, you can't. You don't have a good answer to that.
That was a good answer.
No. Yeah, well, good, great one. Heath, you're on the clock. Round two.
Ban pitch framers.
Robbie Ray. He could use a good pitch framer. He has a hard time throwing it over the strike zone. But I believe there's a chance that Robbie Ray already had his breakout, and bad luck just disguised it. And wow. I know that he gives up a lot of hard hit balls, and that, in theory, would make his BABIP higher, although there's not really a correlation between those two. He had a 352 BABIP against, which was the highest in all of baseball. He had a 68% strand rate, which was one of the worst in baseball. And his home run to fly ball rate was the 10th highest in baseball. There's no way all three of those things are going to maintain themselves. And the thing is, like, that strand rate is the one that sticks out to me the most. Because when you're striking out as many batters as Robbie Ray was, you're supposed to be able to get out of jams easier. Your strand rate is supposed to be higher. His was the exact opposite. There's two possible alternatives. Robbie Ray is going to be better this year, or Robbie Ray is the Michael Pineda of the National League.
No.
He could pitch worse. He could pitch worse.
He's not, like, there's no guarantee he strikes out, what, 12 batters per nine again?
He had the second best strikeout rate in baseball last year.
He could pitch worse.
Yeah.
But I'm with Heath on this one. I can't. Ray is also on my sleepers list, I think.
And you guys are not going to be alone across the industry, I would say.
Yeah.
I would imagine there are going to be very many people.
I mean, strikeouts is the most important thing a pitcher can do, and pretty much nobody did it better than Robbie Ray last year. The walk rate got better as the year went on, and yeah, there's some evidence that he wasn't the most fortunate pitcher last year. I think maybe getting Gene Segura off a shortstop will help in and of itself.
If you were to create a metric for the unluckiest pitcher, it would have been Robbie Ray or Michael Pineda last year.
We got a funny email about Michael Pineda. I don't know if you guys saw it.
No.
I can read it right now. It's in the notes.
I think you should.
All right. Here's the email. Where is it? Where is it? Where are you? Oh.
Control F. Pineda.
So I do. But while you're searching for it,
I
just want to say I have trouble figuring out exactly what it is that made Robbie Ray take such a big step forward in strikeout rate last year. His stuff in terms of velocity, in terms of, you know, I don't think there was a big difference. He didn't throw any different pitches. So I just, that's the big thing with me. If he's a 21% strikeout rate guy like he was the year before, Robbie Ray's not very interesting.
All right, who would you rather draft, Robbie Ray or Michael Pineda?
Robbie Ray.
Yeah. Well, we talked about Pineda last time, and I do agree that the numbers say it was bad luck, but it's been too much bad luck for too long for me to keep saying it's bad luck.
It's really just 2 years, though.
That's 1 year too many.
Robbie,
40% of his career.
Robbie Ray, or, well, he's right next to James Paxton in the consensus rankings. Robbie Ray or Paxton?
I think I've got Paxton higher.
Oh, I love Paxton. Paxton's more than just a sleeper for me. He's a breakout.
And it is worth noting his walk rate almost doubled. His strikeout rate was 20% lower with runners on base. Now, that's going to largely be true for most batters, but he was significantly worse. There's a chance that he just struggles pitching out of the stretch.
Who, Robbie Ray or Paxton?
Robbie Ray,
okay.
Which is something that we've seen with, like, a much better pitcher, but Corey Kluber struggles pitching out of the stretch. He pitches a little worse than his peripherals as a result of that.
Yeah.
So it is worth keeping in mind.
Gotta improve that.
All right, let me read this email. It's from Fred in New York City. He says, "Dear Aaron, Greg, and Gary, We love those guys.
Boons?
No, those are Judge, Bird, and Sanchez.
Okay.
Your discussion of Michael Pineda on Thursday seemed to illustrate the limits of current pitching stats and to suggest that the time has come for a new stat, knows how to pitch osity. All you have to do is add ERA to batting average against and divide that by some stat suggestive of a pitcher's stuff, like average mile per hour plus size of the break on breaking pitches, and boom, knows how to pitch osity. This stat would be fun because Kershaw would be mediocre and Bartolo Colon would be off the charts. After that, work on some other anti-stat stats like clutchness, class, and guts.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So,
I think there's a general consent, like, not consensus, but I think there's a general affliction that, in terms of analyzing baseball players, that we don't know as much as we think we do.
Yeah, of course.
And this email kind of speaks to that.
Yeah. But if you missed the discussion, I just don't think that, Michael Pineda really knows how to pitch. So that was where that came from. All right. Round two for Scott. Last pick of round two, and then we'll go to round three. Give me another sleeper, Scott.
All right. So if it has to be one who can be drafted in a head-to-head points league, I'm going to go with Garrett Richards.
Okay.
Who, you know, isn't far removed from being a high-end fantasy option. But I'm kind of banking on modern medicine with this one. Last we heard from Garrett Richards, he had torn his UCL, going to have Tommy John surgery. He didn't have Tommy John surgery. Instead, he got stem cell therapy. And obviously, this isn't something that has an extensive track record.
Yeah.
So we don't really know how it's going to go, but he recovered in time to make some instructional league starts in October. And, some of the comments from Angel staff there and from Richards himself, I mean, they're talking retrospectively, like they're in the clear now. This is not something they're worried about anymore. Pitching coach Charles Nagy said it's a big sigh of relief as an organization. General manager Billy Epler said he was as excited as he gets. And Richards was talking about how he hopes this opens the door for other guys. You don't have to have surgery right out of the gate. Like, it's already a success. So that's very encouraging.
Do you think he has a chance to have this procedure named after him, a la Tommy John? Think about that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Now, I do think, because Masahiro Tanaka had a torn UCL, and I do think he had some kind of stem cell thing, too.
What did Irvin Santana do? I think there's a difference. I think before him, guys have had, because Garrett Richards had platelet-rich plasma injection in his elbow in addition to stem cell. I believe he's one of the first to have the stem cell therapy in his elbow. I think, didn't Bartolo Colon have it in his shoulder?
He did have a stem cell something or other.
In addition to...
Uh-huh.
But this was steroids. The clearest example of a guy having this instead of Tommy John surgery. And, I think for a 15th round pick, knowing the upside of Richards, why not?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, yes. Richards, sorry. Richards was really good last year. And, he did walk a lot of batters. He made only, I think, six starts. He had three walks. He had three starts with one walk. He had three starts with three, four, or five walks. So he was a little inconsistent with his control, and that led to a 1.32 whip despite a 2.34 ERA. But it was only 34 and two-thirds innings. He throws really hard. Would you rather have Robbie Ray or Garrett Richards, Scott?
That's a close one. I think I'll say Robbie Ray because I think it's going to require a higher pick to get him.
Wow. But Robbie Ray has never been good other than strikeouts.
He wasn't bad 2 years ago.
He was good on the road. He was okay on the road 2 years ago. He's been terrible at home, and he still pitches in a homer park. You know,
well, to borrow a line from Heath, that's why he's a sleeper, right?
I have a different one other than Robbie Ray that I think is in kind of a similar situation, except he had the surgery, and he's one of my sleepers. Do you like Lance Lynn or Garrett Richards better?
I like Garrett Richards better because I think he's a better pitcher.
Yeah. Lynn's kind of like a steady Eddie.
Yeah, I mean,
Lynn was pretty good for like a 4-year stretch, and I would feel more confident that since Lynn's done something that everybody else has done in the past, that Lynn's going to be okay this
year. Yeah, I think it's going to be – I think maybe it's just unnecessarily pessimistic, but I do not feel good about the Gara Richards thing. Like, maybe this is a revolutionary new thing, but we have no evidence. We have no track record.
Nope. I'm going to take a late-ish round pick – now, let me just see in the consensus rankings where Richards is compared to Ray. Ray is 59th and Richards is 65th. So let's say they're a round or two apart. I'd rather take a flyer on the guy who's done it before. Other than, you know, and he can strike out guys, Garrett Richards, not to the same degree that Ray did last year, but he's been a better pitcher than Robbie Ray, which I'm not saying that doesn't
one great kick. Season.
What's that?
He had one great three quarters of a season.
Which is more than Robbie Ray has had.
Sure, but Robbie Ray's 2015 was pretty comparable to Garrett Richards, with the exception of innings. Like, they were both basically the same pitcher on a.
But 2014 and 2016, Garrett Richards was much
34
better.
Innings.
It doesn't matter. Like, he was better. He's shown me something. Robbie Ray has shown one thing, and that is strikeouts.
Garrett Richards had 8.8 strikeouts per nine, 3.9 walks per nine. His ground ball rate went down. It's only 34 innings, so I'm not going to overreact to it. But let's not give Garrett Richards so much credit for six decent starts. Good starts where he pitched over his head.
There were some good starts in there. I mean, that's the thing. That's what I was saying about the walks. Like, he had three starts with really bad control. He had three starts with only one walk.
He only made six starts.
I understand that, but...
And we keep referring back to the 2014 season for Garrett Richards, which was great. 2015 was okay. I mean, it was kind of a Lance Lynn-like season.
2015 was just as good, though.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was. He had a 3.52 ERA, and his FIP was identical.
It was? He had a 3.52
ERA? Yeah, I guess percentage-wise it was similar, but he obviously didn't have the volume that Richards had, which, you know, is the...
Right, but you
is
can't...
the second. Like, you kind of... You're not a good fantasy pitcher without both, you know?
Sure, but Garrett Richards is pitching through a torn...
Okay.
UCL. Oh,
that's
so.
Fair. The reality is you can probably draft both. I mean,
you can very easily draft both. You can draft both. You will have to take Ray
You're
around.
You're exposing yourself to a lot of risk with Garrett Richards, and it's so late in the draft that it doesn't matter. But
right. Exactly.
So we can get to emails. Let's go to round three and do it a little quicker. Scott, first pick of round three. Go ahead.
I really want to talk about Tom Murphy because I don't think we talk about him enough at a position where there just isn't any – thing to get excited about. He is the one thing who I think deserves a big reaction. Just the little bit he's played in the majors so far, 8 home runs and 79 at bats between two seasons. So it's not like you can just point to one or the other and say, he just got really hot. And then you look at what he did in his final 200 at bats or so in the minors last year, 404 with 17 home runs. This guy can hit the ball a long way.
Tom Murphy, catcher for the Rockies.
Yes, it's a similar profile, I think, to Trevor Story. I mean, he's not great in terms of plate discipline. If he was coming up with any other organization, you'd worry about that that being what overcomes the power and him just getting tossed aside, becoming a true quadruple-A type player. But there's such a good safety net in Coors Field. It gives you a higher base BABIP, so you can overcome the strikeout rate easier. The problem for Murphy, and really the only reason why I don't already have him as a top 12 catcher, is because of the presence of Tony Walters. And this was what I was referring to with the pitch framing issue. Tony Walters is apparently an expert pitch framer. All the Rockies pitchers love working with him. He at least had a high batting average in the second half last year. And he bats left-handed. So it seems like, based on what I've read, he has the leg up in this competition going into spring training. But I think even if Murphy is a backup, it'll be a backup kind of like, this is going way back, but when Mike Napoli was a backup catcher for the Angels, still get 350 at-bats, still can probably, with Coors Field as his home park, I mean, he could still probably push 20 homers. I think he'll still be, if not a number one catcher in fantasy, a high-end number two.
He actually could kind of be like what Tommy Joseph was last year when he had catcher eligibility. He wasn't necessarily playing every day, but he got 340 plate appearances and hit 21 home runs.
I keep thinking of Willian Rosario.
He could be like that, yeah.
He had a season like that, too.
And that can be a number two catcher in Roto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A good number two catcher.
It is Tom Murphy was much better in the high minors, especially AAA, which is noteworthy in as much as he played at Albuquerque, which is...
He's good in high altitude.
Maybe.
But there was a clear turning point there. The reason I gave the final 200 at-bats, the 404 batting average, is because through the first 2 months, he hit like 200.
Okay.
And then he exploded. And the final batting average, I think, was like 320.
327. Yeah. Overall at AAA, he hit 310 with 26 home runs in 113 games.
Yeah.
I think he definitely has a lot of upside for fantasy.
All right, Heath, round three.
I'll go with Yoan Hervis. He was on a lot of our sleeper lists, I think, last year. And really, we were right. If he could have just played 150 games, he got hurt, and that kind of hurt him. But the power came around just a little bit. The unsustainably low BABIP for his profile as a hitter propped up a little bit. Still not so much to where I feel like he's due for any regression at all. I mean, if Solarte ever had a year where he had a 320 BABIP, he's probably a 300 hitter. I think he can absolutely hit 20 home runs, drive in 80 to 90 runs. There's a chance that he ends up being a top 10 third baseman.
Heath, I took his fantasy points for Yoan Hervis Solarte, and unfortunately he can't do this exercise in Roto, but if you just want to take his points, he's probably better in points, right, than Roto?
He always has been. Now, the strikeouts went up a little bit last year, but so did the power. So I think he kind of bridged that gap just a little bit. Yes, I'd still say he's better in points.
Yeah, I think the 26 doubles in 109 games and only 63 strikeouts plus no steals, one steal, probably better in points. But, you know, 0.73 fantasy points per plate appearance, not including hit by pitch. I gave him 600 plate appearances. He would have been the number 13 third baseman in points leagues, just behind Justin Turner. The third base is a pretty good position, and Turner had a good year. So right. It's not a bad number at all. And you know, like, who are we talking about with Scott? Kiermaier. Solarte, OPS in three seasons, 705, 748, 808. He's just gotten better and better.
Yeah. I think the expectation for Solarte is borderline startable third baseman. There is still some upside there, though.
All right. Finally, Chris, before we get to the emails, finish us off with your last pick.
Should I go with a guy who's currently being ranked higher or a guy who's currently being ranked lower?
Higher.
Matt Shoemaker.
Oh.
Was...
That's not who I wanted you to talk about.
I want to hear you talk about Matt Shoemaker. He's maybe the most interesting pitcher going into this
year. In baseball.
Right now, I think he's very interesting. And right now at Fantasy Pros consensus rankings, he's 192. I think it's going to be kind of easy to forget just how freaking good Matt Shoemaker was last year. From the point, I believe, of his May 16th start through the end of the season when he had that horrifying brain injury to finish out his season, he had a 2.93 ERA. He had 19 walks in 135 innings. He had a great whip. He had 126 strikeouts in 135. And that May 16th start was his second start back from the minors after he got demoted. And that was the start when he just became the splitter pitcher.
Yeah.
When he just started throwing his splitter 40 to 50% of the time. And it was just a noticeable difference in swinging strike rate, control, everything. I don't think there's any reason to think that it's a fluke.
Well, that's what I struggle with, because there was like an 8-start stretch where his swinging strike percentage,
mm-hmm.
At least the total number of swinging strikes he got per start. The only pitcher who really compared was Clayton Kershaw. It was ridiculous, and mm-hmm. and obviously the strikeout rate was high too. But then it kind of tailed off after that. It was his final 12 starts. It was still good. It wasn't like elite, and obviously the ERA wasn't as good during that stretch either. So
it was 3.32.
It seemed like there was new scouting reports available. The league was adjusting to it.
Sure.
That doesn't mean he can't be good. I just, knowing where he started out, I don't know. I don't know. I ended up trading him in a long-term keeper league, because I didn't want to gamble on him. I got a pretty good return for him. It's worth noting. But I think if you're talking about drafting him in the same range as Garrett Richards, it's fine. It's a sleeper.
He's being drafted in the Robbie Ray, or he's being ranked in the Robbie Ray.
So just
James
a little
Paxton, Adam Wainwright range.
Yeah.
Like at Fantasy Pros, it's Matt Shoemaker at 192. The next five or four starting pitchers are James Paxton, Adam Wainwright, Michael Pineda, Robbie Ray. I think
that is a fun group.
It is.
That is a lot of really fun group.
I also think he's probably, I think he should be the second player drafted out of that group.
It's within that range, and it's a much bigger range.
Sure.
It's kind of just
Joe Ross, Carlos Rodon, Taiwan Walker are the next three. It's, yeah. There's a really
Carlos
fun.
Rodon's
it's
after
just
kind of
pick your
no,
favorite.
No, Carlos Rodon is before those guys.
Okay. Not at Fantasy Pros.
I'm looking at the page right now. It's Rodon, then Shoemaker.
I'm looking at the page too.
Is one of you looking at top 300 and one of you looking at SP rankings?
Yeah, I'm looking at SP rankings.
I'm looking at top 300.
Okay, that's why. I don't know why they're
don't ever well actually me again.
Did I say well actually?
I would take Rodon ahead of all those guys.
Yeah, oh, like
well, I don't understand. Maybe I'm too stupid to get this. How does this happen where Rodon could be higher in the starting pitcher rankings but not in the top 300?
Let's just stick with your two stupid.
Okay.
I would guess there are some rankers out there who have position by position yet and not top 300 and vice versa.
Okay.
And so the cumulative number is being, the average number is being affected by that.
Okay. So I understand that. I'm not too stupid to understand that. That works. Hey, look, this is good stuff and some good names to know. Hopefully get you started and hooray. Let's read some emails. It's a
nice
miracle trip that I have not sneezed on the air right now, by the way. I have been fighting it back so much. I'm just gonna pat myself on the back for not sneezing on the air today. I just want to get that out there. Now, Mark from New York City, dear Dweezil, Moon, and Diva.
Zappas.
How did you know that?
Because I know my Zappas.
Apparently you do. I wonder your thoughts on Trey Mancini. Everything I read about him gets me excited. What do you think about Trey Mancini?
Yeah, his next sentence is, I haven't seen his name mentioned much in fantasy discussions, and the reason I was avoiding it is because I assumed the Orioles would upgrade, and they have. They signed Mark Trumbo. So now, at least on Roster Resource, Trey Mancini isn't a projected part of their lineup. I think he could be a Travis Shaw-type player. I think that's probably his upside. Okay.
Park.
Yeah, but I don't think he's going to get the chance.
Mark in mild Minneapolis. Hey, Molitor, Winfield, and Jack Morris, Hall of Famers and should be Hall of Famer from St. Paul, Minnesota.
I think Chris would say guys that don't actually belong in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, Paul Molitor definitely belongs in the Hall of Fame. Dave Winfield probably does too.
Not Jack Morris?
Definitely not Jack Morris. Sorry, Mark.
Okay. What are your thoughts on Ricky in Alaska? Wow, this is very twinsy. What are your thoughts on Ricky Nolasco? In my Fangraphs points league, five of his last six starts were elites. Could Nolasco carry some semblance of that over into this
Don't year? Ever buy into Ricky Nolasco. I say this as a Marlins fan who once had an argument with a friend after the 2008 season that Ricky Nolasco was the Marlins' ace and not Josh Johnson. just never trust Ricky Nolasco.
I could never figure out what changed for him during that stretch that was dominant. He's right. I mean, it was a great finish for Nolasco. But yeah, just with his history,
he's the original king of the he was the first real, like, okay, these advanced metrics aren't as good as we think they are.
He's kind of like a poor Dan Straley. Dan Straley?
No, he was better.
All right.
Yeah. Now,
he was a good strikeout pitcher back in the day.
He had
Ricky Nolasco
had one really good year.
Yeah.
All right, next email. Heath, you haven't answered one yet, so let's get cracking here. Nick from Charlottesville, Virginia. Can you make a case for drafting either Scherzer or Bumgarner ahead of Kershaw in a head-to-head points league because of injury risk?
Yeah, you can absolutely make a case. I wouldn't do it. I'm still going to take Kershaw. But there's more injury concern with Kershaw than ranking him in the top 5 or top 10 overall probably indicates. Back injuries are a little bit scary.
Yes.
Pitchers that have thrown, even with Scherzer and Bumgarner, the amount of innings these guys throw, that already elevates their injury
risk. That's the big thing
for
me.
But the back
is that
injury, like, that can just pop up at any point.
He is an elevated injury risk for sure, but he's a good example of why no pitcher is that safe. Like, he had no real injury history.
Right.
before last year.
Players that safe either, you know?
Yeah, but pitchers are more volatile.
I used to feel that way, and I still think it makes sense logically. I just don't feel like the evidence has really supported it in recent years among high-end type players. I think it's been pretty close how often each pitchers versus hitters have gotten hurt. I will say, if Kershaw hadn't gotten hurt last year and he just kept pitching the way he was in line to be my number one player. I was willing to make that stand
for
him.
He was putting together the best pitching season ever last year.
Yeah, so the fact that I have him 11th, I think, is downgrade enough for the injury risk. But, you know, Scherzer seems pretty safe.
Yeah, but you're not taking Scherzer ahead of Kershaw.
No, Scherzer's my number two pitcher, but second rounder.
Henry wants to know, is Jonathan Villar going to be good this season? I know he could regress to 45 steals, 10 home runs, 330 on base, and still be great value, but what are the chances that Villar just craters?
You tell us, Henry. I feel like we'd all love to have the answer to that question.
He had a high BABIP. He strikes out a lot. That's always a tenuous grip on greatness. But he also walked a lot and had, and you know, has some power, some speed. He does enough things well that I'm not predicting it for him. I'm predicting he'll be still a fairly high end shortstop.
I think what he said, a 330 on base with 10 home runs and maybe 40 stolen bases. That's pretty close to my expectation.
Okay, that's Jonathan VR.
Pretty good shortstop.
I will say there's some places where he's getting drafted in the third round.
Yeah.
He's going to bust if you draft him there, and he does that.
Zach from Mile High, and then he has the poop emoji in there. I don't know. He does.
Okay.
He does. He does.
I see it.
Just hopped on your fantasy podcast, Dream Ship, and it is yet to run me afoul. In all fairness, though, I just started listening last week. Question. Well, give us time. What should we expect from Hernan Perez, Sean Rodriguez, and Brandon Drury? I'm in some deep fantasy leagues, so these guys are all drafted. Hernan Perez, Sean Rodriguez, Brandon Drury.
You tell us, Zach.
I think Hernan Perez has the best chance of giving you something. Brandon Drury would be second in my mind. And
we have had the Hernan Perez discussion around the cube lately.
He's going to have a struggle to find playing time. All these guys are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the big question for all. Like, the one who's going to be best is the one who plays most often, which could be any of them. I mean, Drury could be the Diamondbacks' everyday second baseman. Rodriguez could be the Braves' everyday second baseman. Hernan Perez, I think it's pretty clear he doesn't have an everyday job, but he's so versatile, he'll still play a lot.
And guys get hurt.
Well, the thing is, I mean, steals are so scarce. And Perez is a known contributor of them, available late in a roto league with tons of versatility. Like, he's getting drafted in roto leagues. He absolutely should. The others, I'm on the fence about. So I guess that puts Perez.
It does help that Sean Rodriguez is going to open the season with four different positional eligibilities.
And yeah.
We'll probably gain a few more in the first couple of months of the season. Let's get him behind the plate, too. Yeah, why not? Yeah. I think he played all eight positions last year, so why not throw him behind the plate?
He pitched?
I don't know if Sean Rodriguez has ever pitched. No, he's never pitched.
Okay.
Let's do it. Let's get Sean Rodriguez at every position this year.
Braves will have plenty of laughers to work him in.
Oh, yeah, they're going to be great.
They're going to blow out a lot of teams.
You guys can't bring me down from the high I'm on right now, okay? My team's going to the Super Bowl.
Ernie from Baton Rouge. Dear Greg, Tom, and John. Scott, do you know them?
I think so, yeah. Greg, Tom, and John. They're
those Braves guys.
Pals.
Who are some relievers to target in a net saves plus holds league? And what does this type of format do to auction values of closers? Saves plus holds.
Makes all the A's relievers better, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Is like, it makes those guys that you feel like could lose their job but are still pretty good.
Yeah,
kind of like Ken Giles. There's not 100% guarantee he's going to stay the Astros closer just because they have so many guys who are good. But
yeah, good call.
If he loses his job in a holds plus saves league, he's still going to be valuable. And you can look at the guys in that bullpen behind him. You know, Will Harris. Yeah, Michael Feliz, guys like that.
Yeah.
Luke Gregerson,
who
Andrew Miller's probably a top five reliever.
Well, here's the thing. It's both moved the top 10.
The important thing, though, is that there are fewer holds than saves.
That's worth noting, yeah. The holds leaders aren't going to have as many holds as the saves leaders have saves, so they're not totally interchangeable there.
They're a little less predictable.
How many holds did Betances have last year?
Well, he had a lot of saves at the end, so he got – well, he had some. He had 28. I'm looking on teamrankings.com. I just did a Google search. Holds leaders last year, Addison Reed had 40, and he might start the year as the Mets closer, so, you know, keep that in mind. And then he was the only one with more than 30. Andrew Miller had 30 holds. So, you know, imagine if there was only one closer in baseball that had that had more than 30 saves. That's why I think the closers are still more valuable than the holds guys, and that is true.
But I think guys like Reed and Hector Neris and Cam Bedrosian, who you would consider high end relievers, who could potentially close at least for part of the year.
Right.
I think those are the ones who are worth drafting on the level of a closer. I think you could go with them instead and be okay.
In a holds plus saves league, in an auction, I cannot imagine spending more than like $3 on a. Maybe like the really elite Jansens and guys like that. But
I try not to do that anyway in mixed leagues with closers. Maybe get one who costs more than three, but that's it.
Yeah, it's just not worth it. Okay, that's it for the show. Thank you, guys. That was good stuff, good sleeper stuff. Appreciate it. Yay. Great for you.
Yeah.
Thin Mint cereal. Very strange. For Scott White, Heath Cummings, Chris Towers, I'm Adam Azer. Appreciate your listening. We'll be back on Wednesday with our early breakouts. See you later.